Greetings, everyone. This is Scotty Reed, Black Talk Radio News, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. And I'm joined in conversation today by a modern slavery abolitionist. I started to just, you know, when you say abolitionist, well, there are many different kinds of abolitionists, but we're talking about something that we're talking about slavery and the fact that it's never been abolished. So we are excited and also anticipating learning from you, brother Dakeem X. But if you will, before we get started, would you tell people a little bit about yourself, the organization that you're a part of?
Yes. I'm actually a child prisoner. I say child prisoner because from the time I was 16 years old up until today, I'm serving a life sentence for, I was accused of killing someone who died of natural causes in a situation which I wasn't involved. But what my point in raising this is that I was criminalized as a child of 16.
Okay. Are you saying that you suffered a wrongful conviction? Because we hear a lot about those, yeah. Especially when you talk about Chicago, John Burge. You're talking about a wrongful conviction since you were 16 years old. Okay.
Right. Yes. I had never, been imprisoned. I was in school. I was in the 10th grade. I was a normal young Black brother. I was probably more conscious than others because, I had at 13, for instance, had went into the mosque and, I looked at Christianity as a slave religion. And I was conscious of who we were and our history since the first grade when I first encountered Harriet Tubman. And that was it. Harriet Tubman just like freed my mind. So I was always, and I lived in a neighborhood that was predominantly white. We lived in a projects in this neighborhood, but there was only like a handful of us, and we had the Klan together because we would be attacked. At one point, a transit worker.
So you're talking about public.
Yeah, we lived in public housing, but we were surrounded by an Italian Jewish neighborhood, and they were still the majority in the projects back in the 60s. In those projects, and the problem was is that we weren't accepted, so we were harassed, we were attacked, people were killed, a trans worker was killed out there, and that was the atmosphere coming out of the 60s that we encountered. Having come out of the atmosphere and speaking and fighting against it, banding together, I was basically targeted. I can't
when
explain.
When you say targeted by who? And I'm starting to get a little bit background. If you have me on some external speakers, if you might could turn those down. Okay, I'm fine now. Maybe it just does it when I first start speaking. It may be on the platform that we on, but please continue.
Yeah, no, I don't have anything on. It was out of this atmosphere and that, my consciousness grew and that I would engage others, and I think that was where the problem was, where we would have a lot of police encounters. They would come to my house and ask questions and have me come down to the precinct and take pictures. And I'm like 14, 15 years old. Mm-hmm. And this is the type of fear that they were placing on us. My mother received death threats. After I was imprisoned, the accusation, which was completely false. I mean, they actually created a murder out of a situation that they claim occurred, natural causes.
So you were a big girl slave catching, active slave catching.
Exactly. Right, that's my view of it. Yeah, because the first thing that I encountered after being imprisoned was that there was a suggestion by, those brothers that were, conscious that I should visit the law library, which I did immediately. And the first thing I encountered was the 13th Amendment to the Constitution. And I was in shock, and I'm still in shock to this day. And my initial encounter, I never forgot the words. I can quote it word by word to this day. Neither slavery nor involuntary servitude shall exist in the United States except as a punishment for a crime wherein the party has been duly convicted. Now, that just stuck with me, and I kept turning it over, and I was like, what does that mean? And I began to see that, I became the focus of attention, even inside the prison, where they tried to have me killed a few times, and I couldn't understand it. And I had to develop a defensive mentality, and I had to fight, a 16-year-old child, So I did suffer a few incidences. I was able to defend myself successfully, thankfully, even against guards, because in there it's a super macho world where only the fittest of the fittest survive.
Right.
And that's how we had to live.
But Hakeem, I don't mean to interrupt you, brother Dakeem. I don't mean to interrupt you, but our time is kind of limited. So you are part of a political party. You're part of what's the name of the party? New African Communist Party?
Right. The New African Communist Party. Okay. And I'm also the founder of The Negation, which is an organization that actually seeks to abolish slavery. There are various functions and levels in The Negation. For instance, we have a union organization. We have an economic front. So there are various levels to The Negation that we apply on a regular basis.
Well, I would like to talk more about the abolitionist part of the party's platform. And specifically, I want to talk to you about the YouTube video that you did. Earlier, we were talking about, you getting into video and using it to spread information. And you posted a video in a Facebook group called Move to Abolish 21st Century Slavery. And this is a group of people who are acknowledging that they are new abolitionists. And in order to be a new abolitionist, you have to first recognize the fact that slavery, in fact, does exist. And we're not talking about, teenagers or any children or anyone being kidnapped on the street and forced into the sexual, trafficking, which is, that's already illegal. If those people who engage in such things get busted, they are arrested, they're, usually convicted, and then they go to prison. But that's not what we want to focus on. But the mere fact that a lot of people in the mass media will not even acknowledge that slavery, in fact, does exist. We have a problem there. We have a breakdown in society. So, or communication. So in this group, you posted this video. And in this video, you touched upon many of things. And some of the things that you, first of all, already just acknowledged that the 13th Amendment. And you told us that you came across that by reading books in the law library, and you came across the 13th Amendment. Well, me, myself, I don't know what your age is, but I'm 49. And it was only when I was 44 when I actually came across the 13th Amendment, read it for myself, and came to the same conclusion that you did, that others have come to, is that the 13th Amendment has a legal exception clause that allows the United States and now corporations, private corporations, to sentence a person to involuntary servitude and, in fact, slavery as a punishment for crime, as long as they've been convicted. So, you know, you are a person who has suffered a wrongful conviction every year. Hundreds we hear about coming out of prison, wrongful convictions. If we go all the way back to the convict leasing program of the 1800s, then, you know, we see that is really common among Black people. You know, as you pointed out, as being a Black male and feeling like you were targeted even as a teenager. So how many other people do you come across and talk to about the 13th Amendment, and do they give you that crazy look or like, you know, you crazy, man? What are you talking about? The Civil War ended slavery. You know, I mean, how do you approach people like that that have that, I guess, mental block of accepting the fact that slavery was never abolished?
I guess that people like ourselves have to accept the fact that we belong to the advanced element. If anyone doesn't see in its most concrete form that slavery was never actually abolished, but that it evolved. I don't know if you've seen any of the other stuff that I've put out, but I put out an analysis called the Theses of the Three Spheres of Slavery. Now, the thesis was based on my initial encounter with Michelle Alexander, because I had discussed with her whether or not she had studied economics. And during my time in prison, I did a lot of solitary time defending myself, and I studied various topics, and economics was one, and I believe I mastered it to some degree. At any rate, my encounter with her was that, you know, I originally disputed the thesis of the New Jim Crow, and the reason was is that I didn't agree with the idea that originally that the new Jim Crow was a new social formation. And the reason why I didn't agree with that was because I was applying what I consider the thesis of the continuation of slavery. Because as you see, and if you look at the other laws like the Constitution in Vermont, the Northwest Ordinance, of 1777, you see that all of these slave clauses exist in all of these laws in different forms. The Vermont Constitution was the original constitution that actually allowed for the exception for the continuation of slavery after abolition.
Right. That's the point that I was really wanted to also highlight. Is, you know, Vermont's constitution as well as the Northwest Ordinance, it was the first appearance on this continent where there was a slavery exception clause. Because as you point out in your video, you know, people of all nationalities, because they didn't have racial classifications back in the 1600s on this continent, practiced slavery. You were either Irish, you were Scottish, you were, you know, whatever nation you were from.
Indentured, yes. And you could be indentured. You could have debts.
Yes.
Slavery is an actual economic mode of production.
Right.
It was a necessary formation that arose out of early communalism. And that was the importance of my studies in economics, because it allowed me to understand the evolution of economic systems and how we went from an early communal system to slavery with the accumulation of property in the hands of private individuals. And this is what caused the entire slave system to emerge. Now, it didn't emerge as a racial system. It was economic. And what usually happened was is that weaker, smaller individuals or clans would come under the domination of other clans, and they'd be enslaved. And that was for the purposes of property, of producing wealth. Now, the point is that it was never racial until the intervention of Europe in Africa and the colonization of the so-called New World, which we know is the Old World. But at any rate, so slavery was a legitimate economic system that actually advanced beyond communalism and led to the development of other forms such as feudalism and later on capitalism. So these are emerging, advancing, developing systems that continue. Now, the reason why slavery, although it's been abolished in many of its forms, it continues is because systems develop unevenly. And so what you're seeing is you're seeing uneven development in the advances in capitalism and feudalism and slavery in the United States. See, what a lot of people don't understand is that we were never freed from slavery. Because when you think about it, in 1865, the first thing that was done by Lincoln and his cohorts was to create a new system. And that was sharecropping. And sharecropping was a continuation of a slave order, a feudal order that was actually transferred from Europe, because the slaves in Europe, what they had become was serfs. What we became here was either tenant farmers or sharecroppers. So what you see is that this advance in economic system actually was to control the ability of us to produce for the ruling class.
All right, let's back up.
So it was just the transfer of property.
Let's back up for a moment, brother. You talked about Lincoln and his cohorts. Let's get specific here. Yes. But you know what I didn't hear you mention after the 13th Amendment, when you said slavery was transformed, you didn't mention prison slavery. And you know, the first private prison started popping up. The first private prison was a federal prison built in South Carolina by the federal government. Well, not the federal government, the first private prison. Was built in about the 1850s. This was like, you know, several years before the Civil War popped off. But you said that Lincoln and his cohorts, you know, came up with a new system, a new form of slavery. And I believe the manifestation of that is the 13th Amendment, which again has the slavery and involuntary servitude exception clause. Now, the sharecropping in the Jim Crow, that affected Black people, free Black people, not formerly enslaved Africans or anybody like that.
Well, that's how it was imposed.
Yeah, but I'm saying after the Civil War,
the law, if you didn't conform and you didn't, because
they were convicted, many
of the slaves were never even released from the plantation. None of them were, so the state would intervene. You had the state would able to go into plantations and actually take slaves off the plantation and try them for whatever crimes they may have committed. And they could also lease those slaves out. That's the role of the state in the slave system.
The convict leasing program, which came up after the passage of the 13th Amendment.
Result of the new laws that, see, a lot of new laws were emerging. And you have to remember, the slave codes weren't necessarily organized for slaves. They were organized for the freed, so-called freed individuals. You understand? Because they didn't need slave codes for the slaves, because the slaves were ruled by the masters. So the slave codes were the informal codes formulated by the states in order to control the freed Blacks, and also to maintain them as slaves. I mean, some of the laws applied to the slaves themselves.
Brother Dakeem, man, I want to stay on topic here. I want to stay talking about the 13th Amendment, but, you know, I find that it's also a misconception that, you know, there were no free black people here in the United States, that we're all the descendants of enslaved Africans, and that's not true. You know, I found that out doing my own research of the area that I live in my own family history. There were, again, 500,000 free black people right prior to the Civil War. Half of the American Revolutionary Army was African descendant people. Like you said, we were already here. This is the old world, what they was calling the new world. And so, but it didn't really specifically, from my research, become racial, and I'm talking about slavery, till after Bacon's Rebellion. And that is when the enslavers, the plantation owners, the 1% of their day, made a deal with the non-African slaves to, you know, become the slave patrols, the policemen that we see out here today, the sheriffs, all of that traces a history to the slave patrols. Now that's when it became racial. So let's, you know, but you still had free black people, long as they didn't, you know, wander off and get kidnapped like Solomon Northrup. The movie 12 Years a Slave, the book 12 Years a Slave. He was free. He got kidnapped. So, yeah, anybody was subject, if you were black, to being kidnapped. But there, you know, there's always been a very huge population of free Africans on this.
They were free, but they were free. They were oppressed as slaves.
They were still oppressed. Well,
I don't know of any large migration of Africans, except maybe the transatlantic trade, but that wasn't a migration. That was for the purposes of trade.
Okay, but let's not debate that point. Okay, we kind of diverge on the history, but let's bring it to the 13th.
If you're gonna deal with those blacks that were freed, they were usually freed under circumstances. For instance, if their father was white, so a lot of the mulattoes were freed. So I mean. But the overall majority of blacks in this country came here or were brought here as slaves.
I will give you that. The majority. Okay. You had about 2 million who were, and a lot of them weren't even brought over here because most of them died, as you point out in your video, but they were bred like cattle. That's what chattel slavery is. They were cattle. But so I think you had about 2 million of these people who were bred, in fact, as slaves. All right. And so, but you had about 2 million of those. You still had 500,000 of free black people who weren't ever enslaved. But I don't want to get stuck on that. That, you know, people could do their own research on that. I want to talk to you about the need for abolitionism today, because in fact, when, you know, we got private corporations like the GEO Group, the Correction Corporation of America, we won't kick it to the Queen of England, the United Kingdom. We could talk about G4S, which is the largest employer in Africa right now. Africans enslaving other Africans through the private prisons, you know. And so that's what I want to talk to. All of this is legal. And a lot of people don't know that. And you mentioned, you know, your point of divergence or point of contention with Michelle Alexander's new Jim Crow was, you know, that she wasn't acknowledging certain things in it. And so, you know, that is what
I'm talking about. That it didn't have economic analysis.
Right. And so, if you explain it in the context of the corporations. She does acknowledge, I've seen her in other videos, that the 13th Amendment never abolished slavery. I didn't read her book.
Well, she's a lawyer. So she knows that was my purpose in encounter with Michelle, was that, was she only applying a legal argument to her new Jim Crow? And that's when I formed my thesis of Three Spirits of Slavery, which shows that slavery evolved as economic.
Let's talk about that. let's talk about that evolution. Let's talk about the GEO Group. Let's talk about the Correction Corporation of America, MTC, and the fact that this is a $1 billion a year industry. Now, we won't talk about the economics of that, right? Not only are they, you know, enslaving people born right here in America would be considered, you know, U.S. citizens, even though we know that's a farce in the way that they're treated and whatnot, but we're talking about Black people who make up the majority of the prison, whether it's state, federal, whatever, they make up the majority. But then you also have these private prison enslavers operating these immigrant detention facilities that they're getting big federal contracts off of. They're profiting. Then they're putting these people to work. Okay, putting them to work, maybe paying them pennies on the dollar, you know, certainly not what they would be making if they had been given a job on the street. We're talking about Fortune 500 companies traded on Wall Street utilizing prison slave labor. And you know, that's talk to me about that. And how that's not getting any attention, despite the fact you got a major presidential candidate not only admitting, but, you know, saying that she's no longer, and I'm talking about Hillary Clinton, isn't taking any money from private prison lobbyists. These are people who write the criminal codes, so-called modern slave codes, that allow these police slave catchers to go out there and catch new slaves for the new plantation. So talk about the economics of that.
Well, what we recently encountered in New York is that the commissioner of the Department of Correction, as it were, was also comes from the private industry, and he brings a lot of the exploitive and oppressive tendencies from these private industries to the state of New York. And so what we're seeing is that they're able to use their criminal codes in order to entrap us. And what we found here in New York, because I can speak specifically about New York, Eddie Ellis called the seven neighborhood, he called it the seven neighborhood study. Under the seven neighborhood study, which I later called the theses of
All right, it looks like we lost
New York City.
Okay, yes, your screen froze up. The video's froze up for a second, but you're good now.
Oh, yes. Well, what he found was that 75% of the entire New York.
All right, looks like we just lost Brother the King. X again, this is a conversation with a modern slavery abolitionist. What I'm going to do is go ahead and I think I got some of these things locked, the seat locked, and he wouldn't be able to join. I'm going to unlock the seat. Anybody that wants to jump in, if you have any questions, you know, about slavery and whether, you know, or not, if there is a need, any questions about abolitionism, period. You know, I think all the evidence would suggest that slavery was never abolished. I mean, there's anybody that reads that, there should be no debate about that, that technically slavery was never abolished. And one of the reasons I wanted to bring Brother the King on is he mentioned in his video the conversations that Lincoln had with people to put that exception in there that would allow the South to continue to practice slavery. You know, there are Lincoln letters to his friend in Congress when he was in Congress, Georgia congressman. I can't recall his name right now, but he was like, before, when the South was talking about seceding from the Union, Lincoln sent him a letter saying, you know, why don't you tell these people I'm not going to abolish slavery? That's not what I'm going to do. They just need to calm down. Blah, 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 blah. Tell them, you know, but this, those people, the enslavers of the South, didn't believe them. And so that's what led to the Civil War. And how they ended the Civil War was by not abolishing slavery, by putting that exception clause. And they agreed to end hostilities because to end hostilities and put that exception clause in there. And Section 2 of the exception clause says that Congress shall have the power to, you know, enforce the legislation or enforce this amendment. Well, what are you writing legislation to enforce that exception? You know, that was giving the South the green light and, in fact, the rest of the nation. And he talked about that, you know, in his video, just a deception. I think he called Lincoln a great deceiver or whatnot. And, you know, he read some other letters from Lincoln, again, during the Civil War, telling the South that, you know, I have no attention. If I could keep the Union together without abolishing slavery, I would do that. You know, I would do it. It don't matter to me, you know. But, of course, in order to defeat the South, they needed free Africans, free Black people to step up and join the military. They also needed the help of the enslaved Africans as well, who provided a valuable resource and labor and as fighting men. And of course, women too, as he mentioned, Harriet Tubman, you know, providing intelligence from behind the enemy lines and whatnot, and developing a whole network of spies in the South. So they needed us. They didn't have no choice. You know, it was that or lose. You know, who knows? Jefferson Davis could have been, you know, president instead of Lincoln. But Lincoln was a great betrayer. He really was. If you read that 13th Amendment, he betrayed every single Union soldier that signed up and not drafted, not drug out there like some of them Irish immigrants. They were just drug off the boat, you know. But the free Africans, you know, and the ones who had escaped, because tens of thousands of them had already escaped. And so they are the ones that volunteered to free their brothers and sisters or people they empathize with out of slavery. So, you know, that is why it is important that we have these conversations with modern day slavery abolitionists, because this movement needs to grow large. And, you know, it's either, you know, you read the 13th Amendment, at least it is for me. You read the 13th Amendment, you see that it legally authorizes enslaving people if you can convict them of a crime. I mean, they put all kind of crazy crimes on the books, sagging, put you in jail, prison for that. You know, you don't really have any true freedom and liberty. You at the whims of whoever the politicians or the political powers are that be. I think Brother Dakeem X is joining us again. All right.
I don't know what happened.
Technical issues, no problem.
Okay, because I was struggling to get back in.
Yeah, but I was just talking about Lincoln's letters and just giving them some of the history and whatnot. So, you know, you do recognize the fact that slavery has never been abolished. Where do we go from here, Brother Dakeem X? I was just talking about that with the, you know, the listeners and the viewers of reading the 13th Amendment, coming to the conclusion, looking at the evidence and, you know, coming to that conclusion that slavery, in fact, was never abolished. Now you don't have to think about, well, if I was born in the 1800s, I wouldn't have been a slave, or I wouldn't have stood for slavery. I'd have been fighting against it and all this and that. But then you come to this realization that, damn, it ain't been abolished, you know. So you either have to make a choice, you know. I guess you got three choices. You can either become an abolitionist, or you can be on the side of the enslavers, or you could be a pacifist and say, you know, I ain't got nothing to do with it. I ain't in it or whatnot. But, you know, we know what has been said about, you know, those people who are apathetic, you know, in times of crisis. So what's your thoughts on that?
My thoughts on that is that people are going to need guidance. And that's why I've done a lot of the writing I've done, the little videos and organizing. We can't expect everybody to understand that in the 21st century, slavery, there are more slaves in the United States than there were in the 1800s.
Right.
And the reason for that is that you have this massive system that basically uses economics. I mean, when you trace it back to not only from chattel slavery, but through sharecropping, debt slavery, and all other forms of slavery and that were being used in order to entrap us, to continue the process. And it never actually ended. Actually, the only way in which people were able to escape that particular period where tenant farming and sharecropping predominated was by moving into the urban areas. And if you were caught, that's when you were lynched. That's why you have all those lynchings. When you see that, those were the patrols that were tracking down the people that were supposed to be under contracts. And they, if they did not obey those contracts, then they were subject to becoming a state slave and being sent out anyway. So that was the vicious cycle. That was the way in which the law was applied so that the it would continue the slave system even in the northern states. So although we're under the illusion that slavery was abolished, we don't really understand the dynamics of the production, even in the state. When I came out, I was working for this program called CEO. It's a nonprofit organization, but they use ex-prisoners to go and deliver the goods that actually are produced in the prison. I mean, soap.
Wow. You're talking about the nonprofit industrial complex. Wow. You're talking about side industries of slavery, precisely. You know, we have actually interviewed this brother who ran such a program, and, you know, he finally came to the realization that him having a job or his company depended on the prison system existing in his current form, or he would be out of a job. And he was like, you know, all the anti-drug and this. And it's cool to be anti-drug. Nobody wants people to throw away their potential or to be addicted to anything. But do they deserve, who are you to strip them of their freedom and their liberty, you know, and put them in the prison where they're being profited off of, turned into modern slaves? And so he finally came to that realization. And so he quit being so harsh on people who do crimes of economics or crimes of survival. You know, a lot of people think that, you know, they try to glorify drug dealing and all that in the movies, but man, don't nobody really want to live that life. You know what I'm saying? Nobody want to live that life.
It's the same with the reformist organizations. What they do is they latch on to the prison system. They carry visits back and forth. They go into prison claiming that they're teaching. But these reformist organizations are actually sustaining and justifying the continuation of the slave order.
They're also part of that reform legislation. That's what I've been trying to tell people. This reform that's going through Congress that they're talking about pushing through. All that means is they reforming the number of years that they can put somebody into slavery. They ain't stopping the process. All right. We got Rocky Nash joining us. Thanks for joining us, Rocky. You have any questions or comments?
I have a few comments. You know, I'm curious as to what we're talking about slavery, because when you go into terms of like the prison, I don't really view that as slavery. You know, back in the day, they used to use prisoners to build roads, et cetera, you know, and they would break rocks.
Yeah, that's the convict leasing program that we were talking about. Let me stop you right there. Okay. Yeah. And then we'll let you continue. This is just how I operate as an interviewer. Okay. Now, you mentioned, I'm glad you acknowledged that prison labor, and we're talking about the labor of enslaved Africans in the 1800s, just let off plantations or wherever they were working and whatnot. And they were used to build the railroad. I mean, you will even see glimpse of it in the movies. You ever heard that TV series, Hell on Wheels? And the prison labor that they were using was these former enslaved Africans, man. You passed laws and you were, so that's slavery, bro. How's that not slavery?
No. I'm not disagreeing with you there. I'm not.
I'm not disagreeing.
You know, back in the day versus today, though, I view it slightly different. Back in the day, hell yeah, man, they tried to imprison black people back then. It was a racist fucking.
Slavery is an economic institution. it's labor that is not compensated. What happens to the slave in prison is that their labor is not compensated. They're given pennies, and those pennies are used to sustain themselves on a day-to-day basis for hygienic purposes. It's just enough to get back to the slave plantation. So slavery has never ended. It's a continuing institution. I used to deliver furniture. I used to deliver a soap. And if you go into any courthouse, any school, and you turn over the furniture, you'll see Corecraft, which is the form of the state production in the state of New York. And this is pervasive. I mean, this is massive production.
You're talking about, hey, let's talk about the Unicor. Are you aware of Unicor, Rocky? You know, you ever heard of Unicor?
Can I finish what I was saying real quick before we continue? And by the way, Jennifer, I don't know if you know this or not, but I can't hear you. I don't know if anybody else can.
I don't think she's trying to speak.
Okay. All right. No, what I was getting at, though, was, you know, nowadays, you know, I don't really view I think that some of the things that people get put in jail for is fucking ridiculous.
Like what? What are some of those things?
For instance, marijuana. You know, I mean, come on. You're getting imprisoned for something that's absolutely outrageous.
Okay, so can we throw nonviolent drug offenders in there?
Yeah.
Can we?
What I'm getting at, though, with y'all are saying about, you know, them building a profit. I really don't see where this major profit's coming from because – you know, it now at this time of day, it costs like $40,000 per person per year to keep you imprisoned.
That's the salaries they pay.
They don't talk about the revenue they make. Right. They don't talk
brother
about
Brother Dakeem, let me y'all calm down. We can't do a lot of over talking of each other. Please let me moderate my program. Please let me moderate my program.
To maintain a prisoner.
Brother Dakeem, let me moderate, okay, the program. All right. Rocky, are you aware that the state of New York, where Brother Dakeem is, pays about it costs $275,000. It might be more than that, but it's $275,000 to incarcerate a child, to incarcerate a juvenile. Okay. Yeah. So we're talking about a multi-billion-dollar industry. You know, we listen to the earning calls. They do. You know what earning calls are? Where you know, you're on the call with the stockholders or potential investors, and you talk about your quarterly earnings and whatnot. We sit in on those calls of the GEO Group, the Correction Corporation of America, because these are public calls. They publish them in the financial websites and whatnot. We're talking about billions of dollars in the vast majority of the people. Listen, I'm not talking about rapists, robbers, anybody that's committed violent crimes, you know, but the vast majority of these people are in there for non-violent drug offenses. I made a video earlier. Let me finish this.
That's unacceptable.
Are you aware that there are 1 million Afghanistan and Iraqi vets in prison, in jails today? And I estimate from research that about 500,000 of those veterans are in there because of nonviolent drug crimes. They were trying to treat their PTSD. Okay, you've heard the stat, 2.5 million people a year at any time are either in prison or jail. 500,000 of those are vets. Well, a million of them are vets, but I think half of them committed violent crimes and possibly may belong there. But the other half were trying to treat their PTSD with what the government calls illegal drugs. Do you think those people should be in prison and their labor being farmed out to corporations?
No, I don't. No. But here's what I am going to get at, though. While I don't think that they should be there, and I don't by any means, because I'm going to tell you, you know, let me go ahead and give you an idea. I am in the military. You know,
okay. So I'm former military.
I am currently in the military. I am in my freaking barracks room right now with my roommate. My thing is that while I don't agree with it, and there are certain ways to cope with it and everything else. And one of the ways to cope with it, they actually will give you the drugs. Well, what drugs were you using? And in what means were you using them? Marijuana shouldn't be illegal. It should be legalized across the entire country. And if I could, I would smoke it today, but I would lose my job, you know. But now what I do think, though, is that, you know, it is against the law. And while it, I may not like it, that it is against the law, it is breaking the law.
What about now, against the Constitution? You say that you're a soldier, right? You say you're in the U.S. military. I spent 6 years. I'm a Gulf War veteran. All right. I spent 6 years in the United States military. The Constitution, what does it say about defending it against all enemies, foreign and domestic? Where in the Constitution does it authorize you to pass laws to criminalize drugs? We're talking about drugs like marijuana, even cocaine, that the human race has used for thousands of years. And so you mean to tell me a bunch of politicians can come along and just pass whatever law and then start throwing people in jail for it? They're passing new laws all the time. We got laws on the books to where they can throw you in jail for wearing certain colors.
I personally think that the military is engaging in criminal acts around the world.
That's what they're defending.
The murdering of third world peoples is a crime against the people of the world. So I think you're a criminal, and I think that you should be brought to account. So take it from there. If you say you're a military, then you're a criminal, because the criminal state of the United States of America has invaded country after country.
There's not a single war
that the United States has been in that has been justified in the last 50 years.
Brother Dakeem, you're engaging
in criminal acts against the peoples of the world. Massacres, bombings, murders, and this is all done at the hands of the U.S. military.
I was based in Saudi Arabia during the Gulf War. Now, this is why I'm not really ready to condemn anyone who's in the military. I don't know how old Rocky is. I know when I went in the military, I was 20 years old. Okay. Hey, you don't know anything at 20 years old. You know what I'm saying? But then when I was over there, I stayed in there 6 years. I think I was 22, 23 when I was stationed in Saudi Arabia for about 6 months. You know, the Gulf War didn't last long. We were in and out. Okay. But during that time, I started reading a biography of Malcolm X and getting a different perspective and getting an international perspective. And it was only at that point that I come to another level of consciousness, and I started viewing myself as a pawn. As a pawn on a geopolitical chessboard. And I'm reading, and I can't share too much classified information, but I will say this. I had access to some of the bomb data assessment reports, and tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people were killed. I felt bad about that. Even though I didn't drop the bombs or anything like that, I was communications. You know what communications is, you know, 31 kilo, then working in the S3. So it was at that point that I viewed myself as participating in a crime against
the people of the world. My brother participated in the invasion of Grenada. I questioned him about it. He refused to give me answers, complying with that military secrecy nonsense. I don't talk to him to this day. Grenada was a crime.
I ain't trying to end up like Hillary Clinton,
but yet I don't see any consequence. The U.S. has made itself almost absolutely free of any incrimination before the world court.
But let's bring it back to slavery. That, you know, the title of this show is "Conversations of a Modern Slavery Abolitionist." But Rocky, again, have you ever read the 13th Amendment? Let's just start there. Have you ever read the 13th Amendment?
You know, I did it all in high school. Be honest with you, I'm 29 years old now. I couldn't recite them off my head.
Okay, let me go ahead and read it to you. I got it pulled up here. We posted it in the chat.
I can quote it.
And I'm just going to ask. Oh, go ahead and quote it.
Military servitude shall exist in the United States except as a crime wherein the party has been duly convicted. From the first time I read it, I never forgot it.
Let me read the entire 13th Amendment to you, Rocky, because you know that's why I'm not ready. Like Malcolm X said, don't be ready to condemn people because they don't know what you know. Because you know there's a point in time that you didn't.
Well, he's an American. He should know the Constitution. He swore to defend by invading countries all over the world.
I'm gonna keep it real with you. You're right.
So don't swear to the Constitution.
But we're talking about kids. We're talking about a country.
Slavery doesn't exist in the United States.
Listen, Brother Dakeem, we're talking about a country that is widely acknowledged has a very poor education system. So we can't, there's a lot of things that people should know, but they don't know. But I'm gonna read it to them. They gonna know tonight, okay? I'm gonna read it to them. Rocky.
Yes.
Section one, I'm gonna read both sections to you. This is section one of the 13th Amendment. Neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime, whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. Has slavery technically, legally, by this document, the Constitution that you're sworn to protect and defend, does that text to you as a person, you 29, I don't know, you know, you've been speaking English all your life, you sound educated, did they in fact abolish slavery or does it still exist from a legal standpoint?
From a legal standpoint, I mean, if we're talking about the prisons, then yes, you know, they break a rule. I mean, that's exactly what it just stated. If they break the law,
that they can be used as slave labor, right?
They used as slave labor from a legal standpoint. Other than the prisons, though, there is no legal stamp. There is no legal possibility in which they can do this.
Why not? They're already doing it.
Why? Other than the prisons? Because if people are, then you know there's supposed to be
private prisons.
No. Let me back up. Let me tell them there. Do a Google search on. Just do something like businesses that use prison slave labor. Whole Foods. You ever heard of Whole Foods?
Yes.
Okay. There was a campaign to get them to stop using prison slave labor because they were using prison slave labor to produce some of the products that they was carrying in their store. They gave in and they stopped using it. All right. Victoria's Secret is one of those companies that uses prison labor to sew some of their garments and do other stuff. Matter of fact, the uniforms that you wear were probably made in Unicor. Unicor is a private prison company owned by the United States government, okay? And they do business with all the other corporations and whatnot. They make furniture. They install components on electronic components on bombs. Man, prison slave labor is being
Hummers.
Hummers. Listen, Walmart, the world's biggest retailer. We just had the Christmas season over, right? If you got a gift and you didn't like that gift and you return it to Walmart, Walmart is going to ship that to this warehouse where they're going to use prison slave labor to break down those packages and repackage them and then resell those. Hey, there are a lot of people on the street that could use those jobs. So what was your question, Rocky? You want to
my
ask question,
was can you read first off, can you read that 13th Amendment one more time?
Yes, I will do that. And I'm gonna read section two, because you're saying, like you said, if you break a law and well that's when they start passing all of these messed up laws that steal people's freedom and liberty. Let me read it for you. Hold up, and I'll let you go ahead. Let me read it. Neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction.
Okay. Now, what you just stated to me, and I want y'all to listen to me before anybody jumps in, please.
Okay.
Is that if you break a law, as a punishment, they can use you for slave labor. You go to prison. Prisons are using you for slave labor. whether they're pimping you out or they're using you for whatever reasons, they're using you for slave labor. It states right there, it says, hey, look, as a punishment, we're going to punish you. We're going to use you however we see fit, however we please, whatever, yeah. You know? Now, it says it right there.
That's what it says right there.
Like the laws that are being placed upon you, maybe we should stop paying so much attention to, you know, the president, because I'm going to tell you right now, in my opinion, I think he's fucking worthless. Let's get rid of some of these congressmen. They're the ones.
What does that got to do with what the topic is about? The topic is about slavery.
You don't like the laws that are being placed.
The Universal Declaration of Human Rights says that slavery shall not exist in any form. The U.S. is acting on an exception and has continued slavery since 1865. Slavery has never ended in the United States. So the U.S.
He is acknowledging
international law. It's a pariah state, and it needs to be brought to account. That's what
happened. In terms of international law, Rocky, Brother Dakeem is dead on point. The United States has signed these human rights treaties, but they refuse to implement them because they contrast with the Constitution. And we hear people talking about, but let's get to you say, let's get rid of President Obama. He got 1 year.
I'm not worried about just President Obama. I'm saying
you're saying that. Now you're talking to what I'm talking. Now you're talking what I'm talking. I think it may come to another civil war. What do you think about that over this question of slavery?
Hey, I said Trump for president.
Last time.
Slavery is going to be the issue of the
Let's
next
set
civil
it
war.
Off. Put Trump in there.
I don't think that slavery is going to become the main issue of the civil war. Honestly, I don't think that's going to be it.
What do you think it's going to be over?
I think it's going to be over laws. It's going to be over a lot of things. I mean, it's been building up
the laws that they put in place to enslave you, right?
You know, it's going to come down to people saying enough's enough. You know, either
I agree. I'm saying it today. Enough is enough.
It's going to come down to slavery, though. I mean, I think
for you it doesn't. Let's
point of view, what y'all are considering to be slavery is, you know, my mom, when I broke a rule when I was younger, she would send me outside and I'd be working all day long. She wouldn't pay me. She wouldn't nothing. She'd feed me at the end of the day. That was it.
Rocky, right. Let's not be facetious. Let's not be facetious and compare your mom. Unless you had an abusive mom, I'm sure she wasn't treating you like a slave. You know what I'm saying?
That was slavery. But imagine that every day. Every day. Not being compensated. Only being fed and clothed and made to go back and work again.
That Rocky, also, look at the conditions of the prisons.
That's an everyday thing.
Yeah. You weren't put into a little pen or a cell or anything like that. And, you know, apparently you don't know, Rocky, the abuses that's going on in prisons today. You know, we did a report because we run a radio station. We got a program called New Abolitionist Radio where we report on the day-to-day activities going on in these prisons, which we call plantations. And there is a prison in a women's prison in Michigan, man, where they were like tying these women up, hog tying them, leaving them on the floor naked, you know, and then having sex, raping them, not having sex, you know, but raping these women. This goes on. Do you know that because of what goes on in prisons that males are the most raped gender in the United States, all of this lawlessness and abuse and stuff, that's slavery, man. That's slavery. That's a lot different than you or I getting punished by, you know, making me go out there and cut the grass or do extra long, you know, chores. And come on, man, let's not go there. Let's not minimize what people are going through.
Do you think that they put you there wanting you to get raped? Or they put you in
They
a room.
Shouldn't be putting you there at all, Rocky. Come on, man.
Well, I mean, this is the other criminals that are doing it, though.
They it's tried to set me up.
Well, wait a minute. You just said nobody should
be
in prison.
As a child prisoner. They tried
you
to
just set said.
Me up directly and tried to have me raped.
Yeah, wrongful
and
conviction.
15 pigs jumped me and tried to stick the baton in my behind for what? To break me as a man. But they failed.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something, man. You don't know what's going on. Your people are imposing on us every day. I spent 3 years in solitary confinement as a child from the age of 16 to the age of 19 without being released from themselves. Just because I had to protect
myself. That's something the United Nations is calling out the United States for right now.
It's
juvenile solitary confinement. You know, solitary confinement is looked at by the international community as a human rights abuse. Okay. Psychologists and psychiatrists have said just putting a human being in a solitary confinement for, I think, like 48 hours causes irreversible damage to a person. All right, so you think about holding people for 40. We got people in U.S. prisons that have been in solitary confinement for 40 years. For 40 years. It damages people psychologically, man. And then we're supposed to, you know, I go to jail. I didn't commit a violent crime against somebody. Why is the state put me in a place to where I'm being violently, you know, crimes being committed against me? Because these are, in fact, crimes. You said yourself, Rocky, nobody should be in prison or going to jail over some weed. You draw the line at weed, okay? That's still a lot of freaking people, man. That's still a lot of freaking people, all right? Mm-hmm. And so maybe, you know, maybe you think, and I live in a predominantly white area, and this county has been described as the meth capital of North Carolina, okay? And so, but, you know, I don't think all these meth heads running around here, as long as they don't steal nothing from me, come on our property, steal a lawnmower to go sell it for $10 so they could get some meth or whatnot. As long as they don't violate somebody else, I don't care, man. Let them smoke meth. Because I damn sure don't want them to go to prison. Then in North Carolina, we paying $60,000 a year to lock up somebody with a drug problem, man. Come on, man. It just don't make sense.
Do you want these people around your children, though?
Hey, these people ain't around. They already around. Look, I was in the military. Big time drugs being used in the military. Come on now. All kind of
stuff. Like those social conditions drop from the sky.
Rape is rampant in the military. I mean, okay, rape is rampant in the military. We know that. It just happens in places.
People use drugs to distract themselves from reality, from poverty, from brutality. That's why people use drugs. So you can't just say, oh, you want these people around your kids, you know?
Yeah, man. I can take care of my kids. You know what I'm saying?
Everywhere else. Why does America have this vast criminal problem where it has to actually imprison or have in some custodial form at least 7 million people throughout the United States?
I mean, and trying to control 7
million
you want to talk
slaves
about freedom.
Of the state.
You want to talk about liberty.
Your status under the Constitution, if you look at it, it doesn't end. You continue to be a slave because what they do is they have you in their system. And so when they do a check on you, when they stop you and they check on you, they run you up as a slave of the state. And this is what happened. This is how we're constantly placed into these situations where we're enslaved by the state. And of course, under the seven neighborhood study in New York, what we found was that the majority of prisoners come from seven distinct neighborhoods, which of course contain a lot of Blacks and Latinos. So,
but you know what, though? I'm so glad that, Rocky, you joined us because, you know, you acknowledge that legally slavery is still being practiced. And so you have taken a step that many other people refuse to take. So I at least give you that. You know, I will give you that.
I like I said, I don't disagree with you. I don't think that, you know, our prison systems were set up originally or anything else to make people fail or to put you in there to be raped, mistreated, or anything of that sort. It was set up to make you work, make you unhappy, and make you not want to come back, hopefully. And you know, I'm gonna go ahead and say I've been arrested multiple times. I did 2 years for 2 counts of controlled substance and unlawful carrying of a weapon. I don't want to go back. I joined the military to try to better myself. When I get out, I got, you know, a little bit of time left. But whenever I get out,
how'd you get in the military with that kind of with that kind of convictions? How'd you get in the military with that?
It took a lot of.
I know they I know they desperate for cannon fodder, and I don't mean to. They got desperate, man. They got desperate after I got out, because they start lowering the standards and, you know, letting anybody in, even if you had a conviction or whatnot. But listen, we got Jennifer trying to chime in. Let's see if we can get her in. We couldn't hear her before. Jennifer, did you have something to say on this issue? Nope, we still are not hearing you, Jennifer. Not able to hear you. Let me try something. Nope, not working.
Can she hear us?
Yeah, she probably can hear us. So it's not. Listen, this is why I tell you, Rocky, man, just read books, man. Read up on the history. Read up on it. And then I don't expect you to know everything that I know or to see the clear picture, because I've been doing this for about 5 years, you know, and talking and doing interviews with professors and law professors. And you know, at least you are acknowledging that the Constitution did not abolish slavery. Now, we just got to work on with you is what do you think is the government, you know, hold up. We're getting a lot of feedback from the person that joined in.
Oh, well, let me go out.
Okay. All right. So, but whether or not let me read a quote. This is a conservative icon, and I usually don't quote her, you know, from what I know about her. You know, I don't think she was a nice person, but she was absolutely right about one thing she said. And that's I may mispronounce it, Ayn Rand or Ayn Rand. And she said the only power a government has is to lock up criminals. And then it says when there are not enough criminals to lock up, one makes them by passing all kind of laws to criminalize behavior. And that is what we have seen a constant progression of since the 1865, since 1865. So, Smokey, did you have something you wanted to chime in with?
How do you solve the problem? I mean, at least they're going to make marijuana illegal, but, you know, when the jail cells are empty, these prisons, I know the federal government pays them X amount of dollars to house a prisoner, these state prisons and stuff. Now most of them are privately owned.
Yeah.
What's the answer, solution to end this?
Oh, well, I'm glad you asked. The first thing that we tell people that we would like to see, and we put together petitions to Congress, to President Obama, was to remove the exception clause from the 13th Amendment. Venezuela also, through the United Nations, asked the United States to remove, well, they asked them to repeal the 13th Amendment. But the exception clause is that says that we can put you into slavery if we convict you of a crime. That needs to be removed first and foremost, in my opinion. I like what Bernie Sanders is proposing in abolishing private prisons and jails. If you do that, you take away a whole lot of the money that is being paid, put into, you know, the lobbyists that get these politicians to pass these liberty and freedom stealing laws, and then the criminalized behavior, so they can cycle more people through the system. So I think just those two simple things right there would be advance in working towards abolishing slavery. But right now, I'm like in education mode, because a lot of people won't even acknowledge it because they've never read the 13th Amendment, or they don't comprehend it. And then they don't tie in the economics like Brother DeKing was talking about. They don't know that Wall Street, this is $1 billion a year industry that's global, man. So, I mean, what do you think about those, Smokey, as starting points?
Well, we got to get the corporations out of it. Because, I mean, it boils down to the money.
Well, there are organizations that are working on attempting to transfer prison guards from becoming oppressors to becoming becoming once again farmers. There's an organization out here in New York called Milk Not Jails, where perhaps you know, those people can return to the farms from which they came, and they can milk cows and actually produce something rather than practicing their political or religious beliefs. Because that's what happens. Because it seems like they use these outer areas in order to actually maintain these slave populations. And there's no relationship between the population and those who are being exploited. So the only other aspect that I can see, the only other solution that I can offer is national liberation. We are making a demand for reparations. Our reparations would be in the form of land, means of production, preferably the former slave states of the Deep South, including South Carolina, Georgia, Mississippi, Alabama, and Louisiana. And so we are demanding reparations for slavery in the form of land and means of production in order to free ourselves. We want national liberation. We want self-determination. We want self-government. So,
and you're speaking for the new African Communist Party, right? Farms.
If you want to enslave your own people, you can do that. But
brother,
I demand for national liberation and reparations.
Let me make it my position clear is, although I do think reparations is old and it's more, but first you got to know if you were actually a descendant of an enslaved African, because a lot of people weren't. But I am focused foremost on ending slavery. Like I tell people in the reparations movement, let me finish.
Doesn't just stand here. I mean, you have the Caribbean nations of the world that met recently in New York. Listen to me for a minute. You had the Caribbean nations that came together right here in New York. We all met from all over the world. So the demand is not just concentrated in the continental United States, but the demand extends for reparations in the Caribbean and in Africa.
Because I'm very well versed on the reparations movement.
And I'm not asking to line my pockets. What we're asking
for, Brother Dakeem, I'm trying to stay focused on
reparations and means of production.
Okay, got you. All right, got you. Now, me myself, I'm not on here to talk about reparations, because the thing with the reparations movement is most of the people in the reparations movement, except with the exception of Brother Dakeem, don't even recognize that slavery has never been abolished. So I focus all my energy on ending slavery first, okay? And then we sort all that other stuff out later. Let's end slavery now. Then, you know, the people that's old reparation, they get it. I'm kicking that can way down the road, because I know slavery exists right now. It's being practiced. People are suffering under it, and it needs to stop. That is where my aim is. After that, then we sort all this other stuff out later.
What's a different word to use?
I'm not waiting. I won't see them in my lifetime, because I'm a slave for life. So that means
I'm a slave, and I'm fighting the war now.
I'm ready. I don't even want to hear all of that other stuff.
But what's the difference for them to change their mind about enslaving us?
Slavery never ended. We're not going to be free without making some form of demand. Our demand has to.
Isn't that the demand, brother?
And reparations is not something that we are putting our hand out begging for. We'll take it.
But is there a different word to use besides slavery? Because when we hear slavery, what we think of is the African American back in the day of slavery, and that's what goes through the public's eye, and they say, oh, slavery's gone. There's got to be another word we can come up with to use, because, you know, they've never done away with it. I agree.
Here's the problem. Here's the problem I have with that.
They broke in the white people, too, into it.
Yeah. This is like mass incarceration is a term that Michelle Alexander came up with. The reason I choose not to say mass incarceration, but that's that other word that people are using, because it doesn't fully translate into what is actually happening. This is slavery. All the abuses we think about from the movies we see about that time period, the books and journals that were left behind detailing the brutal history, all that stuff still going on in these prisons. Think of the movie Django. Remember Django was talking about, they were talking about Mandingo fighting. Look, they got prisoners, guards are having prisoners fight each other to the death in these freaking prisons and betting on it. The same stuff is going. We hear about the women, you know, the enslaved African women being raped and, you know, just abused all around. All right. That's going on in these prisons, and not just the women, but the girls as well. Well, to little boys as well, juveniles. We're talking about kids. You know what I'm saying? So I understand what you're saying. You know, when you tell somebody slavery was never abolished, they got to fight through usually 12 years of programming from grade school, whether they went to college. They got to deprogram themselves from the Steven Spielberg movies and all of this media that has told them that slavery was abolished. So I understand your question and where you're coming from. Some people choose to call it mass incarceration, but for me, it don't explain the horrors of actually what's going on, in my opinion.
Well, the mass incarceration
It's economics. The form of production.
Go ahead.
That's what you look at when you look at slavery, uncompensated labor. So there's no need to define it or to
Yes, it is.
It's labor that's exploited and it's used and it's not compensated. That's what slavery is. I'm not talking about the torture. I'm not talking about the beatings. I'm talking about the economic.
All right, let me try to manage this, because we can't be talking over each other. We're talking about slavery, and Brother Dakeem, you saying we don't have to define it, we don't have to educate people. That's a lie, man. When you have the vast majority of the people out here who don't even know that slavery still exists. All right, they don't know. So, I mean, in order for you to get people to support a movement to become abolitionists, is first you got to explain it to them. You got to educate them on the issue and provide them with the information to where they can then make a choice. Am I going to be an abolitionist, or am I going to be a person that's willing to predict slavery to keep happening? I see it, but I don't feel like I can do anything about
it.
But
they're in denial.
So I disagree, Brother Dakeem. We do have to explain it to people. You know, I understand that you're a black nationalist and everything, and I got ties to the black nationalist community, but at the abolitionist movement, our group, Move to Abolish 21st Century Slavery, we are of all different ethnic backgrounds, religious, political affiliations. Man, we ain't got enough abolitionists to be discriminating and be trying to do this all by ourselves. So, Smokey, you was trying to say something. Go ahead.
And I do believe in our liberation. I'm not a black nationalist.
Okay, I'm not hearing anything.
And I'm a black patriot. What that means is that I believe that our people have to be liberated in our lifetime. And we're not going to be liberated so long as we allow slavery to continue in these United States. And you can discuss
when
it
you say
in
your people,
face, but what
when
I'm
you
telling
say your people, I'm here to tell you.
He's trying to ask you a question.
Slavery in the United States is an objective condition. It is defined by its economic exploitation of the individuals who are so enslaved.
Right.
So
okay.
This is what slavery is in the United States.
But
it's
you just can't say
without compensation,
because the Latinos and the white people in it. Look at that judge that was getting paid to fill the buddy's jail for kids.
Yeah, in Pennsylvania, the Kids for Cash. The name of the private detention facility was like, and this is how evil and despicable and deceptive these people are. They gave this private youth detention facility a name like I forget the name. It was like kids, we'll take care of kid child care, Pennsylvania child care, something like that. You know what I'm saying? Where if you was to look it up, it, you know, in business records, you would think that this was a daycare center or something like that. But what it was a private detention facility. And these two judges, I think they got like $1 million apiece in kickbacks under the table to sentence these children. These are juveniles, sentence them to youth detention facilities, regardless of what their record was or the seriousness or trivialness of whatever it is they were accused of doing. And so that's slavery right there.
Don't you think it only takes one phone call when their jail cell starts empty to the whoever's in charge of all the district attorneys? And say, hey, we need to fill up the jail cells.
They already doing that.
Exactly.
Rocky mentioned earlier, I think it was Rocky or it might have been Brother DeKim mentioned earlier, that these corporations have a contract with some of the states to keep prisons 90% full. Right there is a premeditated, you know, premeditated conspiracy to lock people up. To lock people up, man. And so when those jails are not up, and then on the taxpayer side, whether those jails full or not, you still got to pay. You still got to pay. But of course, what's that, Rocky?
I just want to say, you know, I don't disagree with y'all by any means. If the system's corrupted, it doesn't work. Okay. You know, just like with them judges. But while at the same time, when they got caught, their asses were in a sling as well.
And they need to be in one.
Yeah, and they needed to be, But that's not saying that this shit is just accepted across the states. It's not, you know, obviously.
It is. A lot of people not even aware.
Well, I know, but when they did find out what was going on, shit got dealt with.
Oh, no. You better believe, Rocky, that people in that legal community knew this was going. This the good old boy network, man. I live in, you know, the stuff that goes on in counties, at little courthouses, and you know, we hear stories like it out of Alabama. You had the narcotics squad that admitted that it was planting guns and drugs on black people in Alabama, planting guns and drugs on them, man, to arrest them and put them in the prison on drug charges. And this went on for decades, man. As long as don't nobody snitch, then who gonna know? Somehow that information got out.
Eventually, they found out. It was accepted whenever it got out. Now, what I wanted to say originally was, as far as for what I think about our prison systems, I think if we want to fix it, I don't think that what we do necessarily is wrong. Now, what I do think is that it could be done better. Do I think we should have private prisons? Fuck no, because I don't think people should be making a profit off of it. It should be a nonprofit organization, okay? Yeah, you should have to work. Yes, they probably should be making some money off you, but that money should be used to keep taxpayers like me, you, and everyone else from having to pay for you. Sorry, ass, why you're in there.
Hey, what about paying child support?
Okay, hold on. Can I say something? Okay, so compensate them at the fair market rate. That's my proposal.
Yeah, that's what I was about to
say. Now, then the prisoner can not only be a productive person and come out with skills and also pay taxes and also provide for their families. Compensate them for their labor at the fair market rate. And then what you'll have is a situation where you have a person that's prepared to go in there and go out back out to your society and produce for you. But that's not what you want. That's not the purpose of these prisons. These prisons, what they do is they create
revolving door.
These conditions, the conditions are created to assure that certain surplus population is placed in these prisons for exploitation, for the purposes of economic exploitation. So this is why you have unemployment. This is why certain neighborhoods are targeted. This is why you have only 5 people per 100,000 that go to prison in New York from areas in Queens, while over 500 people per 100,000 go to prison from the Bronx and Harlem. So this is the type of disparity that we're faced with, and the targeting, it's directly linked to the economic order.
I want to go, hey, and I'm about to wrap this up because I've been on here a long time. We got to wrap it up. But Rocky, too, what he's saying to you, think about this. Look, man, AT&T, they use prison labor to do call center work. I was communications coming out of the Army. I used to work for Sprint PCS in a call center, making $60,000 a year troubleshooting, you know, customer service calls, helping them with their cell phone service. They told us that, you know, they were going to shut us down, that our jobs were going overseas. You know, that's when those jobs went to like India, where they speak English, but it's a different kind of English. So people complain about that. Now those jobs have come back, but now they're in the prison. And so instead of me having that $60,000 a year job troubleshooting cell phones for Sprint PCS, now that job has gone to somebody in prison who's being forced to do it for probably 25 cents a day or less. You know, they're not being paid the labor market rate. That's what makes it slavery. That's what really makes it slavery right there.
Economic condition.
Now, if they had to pay these prisoners what they would have made on the outside, then guess what? These corporations would stop going to the prisons, and then they would just hire us.
If you paid somebody $60,000 a year to go to prison, fuck, you know, sign me
no,
up.
No. What do you mean?
You're not paying anybody to go to prison.
That's how are you going to pay somebody?
No, I was being paid
$60,000 a year. Rehabilitating the person.
For a job.
For prison?
Yeah. Now those people in prison are doing that same job.
To make the person a productive citizen. To rehabilitate, to re-educate, to redevelop, to reintegrate. But that's not the purpose of your prison. Your prisons historically have been institutions for the exploitation of slave labor. That's what you're
doing. But like Smokey was saying earlier, a revolving door. That's why you got the felony status and whatnot. So you know,
I disagree with. I haven't disagreed with y'all on the revolving door, on the system being fucked up or anything else. What I did disagree with y'all on is why would I pay you a great deal of money or anything else or compensate you if you did something to get your ass put in?
Because you worked.
No.
You exploit my labor. If you worked, you would want to be compensated.
Forever, bro. Just let me finish.
What it means is no slavery, no exceptionalism.
Brother Dakeen, let him finish talking.
All right. I always wait for you to finish. Just give me a
minute. I think you misunderstood the premise.
You're making an argument for the continuation of slavery. That's all you're doing.
Listen, Brother Dakeen, but we can't overtalk each other. Listen to what he's saying.
He's making an argument for the continuation.
I think I know where the confusion is coming in.
Yeah.
Let me lay it out again, and Rocky, then you respond. I said, when I came out of the military, I went to work for Sprint PCS. I'm getting paid $60,000 a year to troubleshoot that job. The company, because it could get cheaper labor, decided that it was going to lay me off and close that call center along with probably about 200 other people. All right. Now those jobs are being done by people in prison. People in prison. They shouldn't even be there under nonviolent, you know, offenses. So what I'm saying is that creates the conditions to where then, because I can't find a job because you laid me off, because you can get cheap labor in prison. First, you was going overseas, but now you found out, oh, I can just use Unicor and get prisoners to answer my customer service calls. So now I'm out of work. Then I'm on, you know, welfare or whatever, so I can eat until I find a job, or I might sell some weed to sustain myself, because I ain't gonna freaking starve and I ain't gonna be out there on the street because these people won't give me a freaking job, you know. And then you think about when these people get out of prison, when they've been working for these corporations answering those phone calls, these same corporations won't even hire them, man, because they got what? They've got that lifetime felony status on them. So we're not talking about people, let's just say, who go out there and murder somebody. We ain't talking about those people that should be there. They took a life. They raped a child. They did whatever. Okay, we ain't talking about those people. We're talking about the vast majority of the prison slave labor force who are in there for nonviolent drug crimes, man. That's like two-thirds of the system. That's two-thirds of them.
Okay.
All right, now go ahead, Rocky. I just wanted to explain. Okay.
I never said that it wasn't fucked up that they're making a profit off of anybody. I agreed with y'all and said that this should be nonprofit. They shouldn't have private prisons. Okay. They shouldn't be making money off of them. It should be nonprofit. If you're in there, you should be working your ass off. You know why? Because you're in there
for, or going to school.
For you know, or going to school. They have school programs.
Right.
I know. I got my GED. Right. You know? Come on. You know, they got ways that, you know, I know people that went in, come out with college educations. You know, what I'm getting at, though, is that I don't think that we should be abolishing it. And I damn sure as hell don't think that we should be compensating anyone for it.
You should be abolishing slavery or prisons.
No, what I'm saying is the slavery in the terms of which y'all are calling it. Yes, you should be working.
Calling it? Read your constitution, pal.
All right.
No, because you're talking about we're not calling it anything. He read to you the Constitution twice. You're not accepting it. What you're doing is you're saying it's all right to enslave our people.
As a punishment.
I'm telling you it's not all right.
I think it's acceptable.
I'm telling you that punishment. That revolution is the conclusion that a rationalizing and reasoning can no longer be achieved. That's what I'm saying to you. And this is why this
all
is
right,
going
to be I'm going to have to get ready to wrap it up. Smokey, you had something to say that you want to say something.
And we got a minute for Rocky because I think what he's trying to say. I'd
really like to finish.
Yeah, because if we just
took the
corporations out of the deal and things would be better, less people would be going to jail. But go ahead, Rocky.
Exactly. It wouldn't, take the corruption away, take the profit away, take the money away. All right? Believe the system. All
what
right?
system? Slavery? That's the only system there is.
If you want to put it like that,
No, unacceptable. Unacceptable. And it will be abolished by any means necessary.
All right, folks. I got to leave it there, man. We've been on about, 2 hours? I want to thank everybody for tuning in and chiming in. And, hey, I'm going to leave y'all with this, man. Like we say on New Abolitionist Radio, you know, peace to the abolitionists and death to the oppressors, man. We got to end slavery. Y'all have a good night.
Homeland, have a good day.